Very good Thursday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In today's show, Taylor Charlstrom has a feature report on the how and why behind GPS soil mapping for variable rate applications. Kathy Merlo will have a report on the wine grape outlook, and I'll bring you national and regional agricultural news, and the regional agricultural news report will start right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In regional agricultural news, Packet has announced that it has expanded its partnership with a Kroger company to commence an operational pilot supporting Kroger's growing e-commerce network. They are thrilled that Kroger has chosen the Packet Fresh mobile refrigeration solution, according to Melissa Keiling, founder and president of Packet. She says our Echo Freeze totes ensure a mobile, chilled, food-safe environment that pickup orders can be directly packed into for fresh curbside pickup for customers. The Packet Fresh mobile refrigeration system creates efficiencies throughout every step of online grocery order fulfillment. The collapsible, freezable, reusable Packet Fresh EcoFreeze totes represent a seamless plug-in for retailers to meet growing storage, pickup, and delivery demands. Each Packet Fresh tote features Packet's patented EcoFreeze technology, freezable gel built into the walls of every Packet Fresh tote. EcoFreeze technology keeps perishables cold and food safe for 15 hours. Packet Fresh is headquartered in Agoura Hills, California. At a ceremony this week at its terminal yard at the Port of San Diego, Dole Food Company has announced a $1.5 million electrification project at its West Coast port operation. This project has funded five new electric utility tractor rigs to add to Dole's growing electric fleet of container transfer trucks. These new terminal UTRs add to the two existing electric vehicles currently in operation at the facility. They are funded in part by the Clean Off-Road Equipment Voucher Incentive Project, or CORE, which is administered by the California Air Resources Board. CORE is intended to accelerate deployment of advanced technology in the off-road sector by providing a streamlined way for fleets to access funding that helps offset the incremental costs of such technology. Dole will retire four diesel-powered UTRs with these new battery electric units, resulting in a substantial emission reduction. As per the research submitted in Dole's application to CORE, each new UTR will avoid 0.32 tons of nitrogen oxide over the 10-year life for a total reduction of 3.20 tons of nitrogen oxide per UTR and a cumulative project emissions reduction of 12.78 tons of nitrogen oxide over the next 10 years. With these changes, Dole now affirms 35% of its port transfer UTRs are electric, well on its way to meet the company goal to be 100% electrified in its UTR fleet by 2030. Dole's efforts also align with the port's maritime clean air strategy, which helps to identify future projects and initiatives to improve health through cleaner air while also supporting efficient and modern maritime operations. The events of the last 2 years have shined a light on the pressures faced by California farmers, ranchers, and farm workers and created a greater appreciation for their accomplishments. Many of these pressures are impacted by factors out of their control, like climate change, drought, markets, weather, evolving policies and regulations, global supply chain issues, and geopolitical events. Some of these seem unrelated individually, but they all have a very real impact on everyday decisions and efforts to maintain and expand viable businesses and family legacies. CDFA is committed to facilitating equitable mental health support and resources for farmers, farm workers, and organizations that would work directly with the agricultural community. In advance of Mental Health Awareness Month, which is May, the California Department of Food and Agriculture is introducing a new webpage to promote the Western Regional Agriculture Stress Assistance Program and California's CalHOPE Network. The webpage and related outreach outreach materials are available in English and Spanish. The project was made possible by a $500,000 grant from the USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture. CDFA and its partners will disseminate information and resources within agricultural communities to assist farmers and farm workers needing mental health assistance. Additionally, partner organizations Cal AgriAbility at UC Davis and CSU Fresno will host question, persuade, respond workshops intended to teach individuals how to recognize the warning signs of suicide, as well as provide training for organizations assisting farmers and farm workers in the Central Valley. CalHope will disseminate brochures, radio spots, and digital ads in English and Spanish to ensure more farmers and farm workers are aware of the existing mental health resources and can access help when they need it. An additional partner in this project, the California Health and Human Services Agency, operates a CalHope program which delivers crisis support for communities. There is a virtual public stakeholder meeting scheduled for May 6th to discuss challenges and opportunities for addressing farmer and farm worker health. For more information on that meeting, log on to growmentalawareness.org. In March of 2022, IRI's survey of primary shoppers found that 92% of consumers believe food prices are somewhat or a lot higher than last year, of whom 95% are concerned about it. That, according to Jonna Parker, team lead fresh for IRA, which does customer surveys. This includes 49% who are extremely concerned, which is far greater than the 27% of consumers being extremely concerned over coronavirus in this same survey. This means that inflation has a far greater grip on the nation's food spending than COVID-19 in the current marketplace. The inflationary levels are prompting a range of money-saving measures among 72% of consumers. While shoppers tried to combine all grocery needs into one store, one trip in the past few years, 17% of consumers now visit multiple retailers to get the best deals, according to Parker. Switching stores is typically one of the very last measures that shoppers will take in order to save, but clearly, the widespread nature and the level of inflation are such that even an extra trip to capitalize on lower prices or promotions is worth it. Others, especially lower-income shoppers, are leveraging online shopping as a money-saving measure, given the ease of comparing prices and promotions across grocery stores and the ability to monitor the total spend easily as items are added to the online basket. More commonly, 48% of consumers are looking for sales promotions. However, in the volatile market, both the frequency of promotions and the depth of the discounts are down significantly versus pre-pandemic across departments. Other popular money-saving measures are cutting back on non-essentials, looking for coupons, simply buying less, or switching to private brands. These measures have resulted in prolonged unit and volume pressure across most categories, while dollar sales are boosted by inflation, according to Parker. IRI conducts customer surveys as they are a total data management company.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
We've discussed quite a lot on the show the unprecedented rise in input prices growers have been seeing over the last year, but we haven't gone into some of the more technologically advanced tools they're considering or even reconsidering to better fine-tune nutrient management. One of these tools is soil mapping, which uses GPS to better direct fertilizer applications. And while this tool isn't a new one, it's one that industry men like Wilbur Ellis's Matt Comrie advocate for in these times.
What we're doing in essence is we're exploiting two of the four R's. Okay. We're applying product not only at the right rate, but we're putting it in the right place in that particular field. You know, we large orchards or large ranches, you know, they break their orchards up into manageable pieces, right? And we call those blocks or fields or what have you. A lot of times they're based on irrigation sets, but also it's so that the grower has the flexibility to be able to manage each one of those pieces separately and differently. And in essence, what we're doing with the with soil mapping is we are breaking that contiguous field up into smaller management zones that we are then able to treat One, we're able to understand the differences or the variance, right, across that field. And two, we're actually able to make actionable decisions or treatments based on the variation that we're seeing. So it's incredibly useful. And, you know, it just, all the growers I taught, it just makes sense, right? It's just one of those things where you're like, okay, wait a minute. You mean I can break these different soil types that I know are out there, you know, and I can treat them differently using GPS, which is already an acceptable tool. You know, all of most tractors nowadays have GPS on them. You know, we pull berms with GPS, we laser level. Everything that we do in the field, in essence, is heavily influenced or guided by GPS. So why not make our fertility applications guided by GPS?
The process of generating a soil map consists of pulling a specialized piece of equipment across the target field or orchard, generating specific measurements that are later used to direct composite soil sampling. Once the field is mapped, the raw measurements must then be processed into management zones for further evaluation. To get started with this technology, Comrie recommends talking to a service provider that can bring the tech out into the field and show the grower themselves firsthand.
Really, where it starts is a conversation with, you know, some of these companies that, you know, Wilbur Ellis is one of them that has the ability to bring a piece of equipment through a grower's field or a grower's block and be able to map the variation. In essence, what we're doing is we're mapping soil texture or mineral composition or how heavy or how much, what the salt distribution looks like in terms of a bulk salinity, not necessarily a sodium, you know, et cetera salinity. I mean, bulk salinity. And so when we map that, you know, we know that based on that map, we know that that soil is going to hold nutrients differently. It's going to, just by soil texture, we know that it's going to have either a greater or lesser nutrient content in that soil, which then indicates that we can treat that soil type differently. Now, specifically the process, it would look like a grower having a conversation with someone like myself or a precision ag technician who has the ability to map the field. And in essence, the field is mapped, right? So we take a piece of equipment across a field that is sending signals, and depending on which piece of equipment you bring through the field, I'm going to speak just in terms of electrical conductivity, because I think it might be the easiest to kind of conceptualize and understand. So we know that deionized water does not conduct electricity very well, right? It's the ions or the salts that are dissolved in water that is actually conducting the electricity. And so when we have a field that it has some level, some appropriate level of soil moisture, we can, in essence, send electrical signals through that soil. There's sensors that send the signal, and then there are sensors on the equipment that receive the signal. And in essence, we're testing how well is that signal conducted through the soil. And then that then gives us an indicator of what soil texture looks like. So the measurement is electrical conductivity, EC. And the unit is millisiemens, and in essence, it is a charge, or measuring the charge of that soil. And then based on, we can then group those measurements. We take the raw measurements, we process it to some degree to identify different zones or different areas within that field that we believe are going to behave, behave similarly.
Raw or initial readings or measurements generated from the equipment are typically expressed as color-coded individual measurements compressed together. The result is a soil map that can seem pixelated and difficult to interpret and or evaluate. Computer software is used to generate zones based on parameters such as measurement ranges or soil texture. And once these zones are created, composite soil samples can be taken to understand mineral composition throughout the management zone, as well as the entire field. Once soil sample reports are back from the lab and nutrient needs are identified and well understood across the field, a grower can now move to determine the appropriate product needed to treat the field and how they will treat the field.
We can generate the raw maps. We can go to a recommendation that's typically performed by myself, and then go all the way to potentially doing a variable rate application and or helping the grower find a third-party applicator who has the ability to do variable rate applications. Not every spreader, not every piece of application equipment is capable of doing a variable rate application. It does take a special controller as well as a special flow control valve. And in regards to a dry spreader, the flow control valve on the back that operates the gate and the belts, the spinners, all that kind of stuff is, I don't want to get too technical. I'm far from a mechanic. I know enough to be dangerous. But so I guess to start would be reaching out to either, you know, myself or Wilbur Ellis, because we do it quite often. We have a great team.
The main pushback of technologies like soil mapping for variable rate applications in the past is that it was actually cheaper to just spread X amount of nutrients over an acre of soil without having to use soil mapping. But now that these input prices are skyrocketed, technologies like soil mapping have become more cost efficient.
And, you know, I'm the guy who works for the, you know, the retail ag outlet who's trying to tell you, hey, we can potentially reduce the number of pounds that we're applying in some of these fields. And so that has been the major apprehension, is not enough of a cost savings to justify a grower getting outside of their comfort zone, right? And looking at some of this. And another thing I would say is, you know, growers don't have to understand or be experts at this stuff. You know, it really just takes a phone call. And, you know, we have a number of folks who would be happy to meet with a grower and explain this type of technology and the utility that comes with it.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news, the consumer price index increased 1.2% in March, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Over the past 12 months, the all items index increased 8.5% before seasonal adjustment. Increases in the indexes for gasoline, shelter, and food were the largest contributors to the seasonally adjusted all items increase. The food index increased 1% in March, as the food at home index increased 1.5% over the month. All six major grocery store food group indexes increased in March. The largest increase was for other food at home, which increased 2% over the month. The index for fruits and vegetables rose 1.5%, following a 2.3% increase in February. The index for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs increased 1% in March, while the index for cereals and bakery products rose 1.5%, and the index for non-alcoholic beverages increased 1.2% over the month. The dairy and related products index also increased 1.2% in March. The ethanol industry says President Joe Biden's announcement in Iowa that his administration will restore summertime sales at E15 this summer should help to ease soaring gas prices. Biden made the announcement this week at an ethanol plant in Iowa as annual inflation jumped 8.5%, 43% for gas alone, made worse by the ban on Russian oil. Ethanol groups had pressured the White House for months to restore summertime E15 sales, halted by an oil industry lawsuit to ease gas prices. Renewable Fuels Association Chief Jeff Cooper.
Ethanol is cheaper than gasoline today at the wholesale level. It's been selling for 70 to 80 cents per gallon less than gasoline in recent weeks. And so common sense tells you that when you add more of a lower cost fuel, the resulting cost of the finished fuel for the consumer is going to be reduced.
It was estimated even before the run-up in gas prices, nationwide access to E15 could save drivers more than $12 billion annually in fuel costs.
That $12 billion number is based on an assumption that E15 is going to replace E10, universally in the marketplace. We know that's not going to happen overnight. That's not going to happen this summer. But what we do know is for drivers that are buying E15 today, they are getting a 25 or 30 cent per gallon discount in many cases.
2,600 gas stations across 31 states now sell E15 approved for 96% of light duty vehicles. Cooper on chances for extending the Biden emergency summertime waiver.
The White House today in this announcement hints at the fact that they are interacting with a group of states, primarily Midwest states, on a long-term permanent solution that hopefully will be in place before summer 2023 and would obviate the need for any sort of emergency waivers at that point.
Biden also announced his administration will soon disperse long-awaited COVID-19 emergency relief funding to renewable fuel producers and increase investments in low-carbon sustainable aviation technologies. Less rice is expected to be produced worldwide compared to the previous month, but will that have a significant impact on a global balance sheet? USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Lower global production in rice is forecasted in April's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, down 1 million tons. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Chekanowski says among the major producing nations contributing to this decrease.
We reduced our forecast production estimate for Brazil by 100,000 tons. Most of the rice in Brazil is grown in the southern part of the country, and that area has been suffering from pretty severe drought now for much of this growing season. We also reduced Indonesia's rice production by 1 million tons. What we're observing is a shifting of area within Indonesia into corn, and a lot of that has come out of rice.
Even with the lower production forecast for global rice this month, and
even though we reduced ending stocks this month by 1.7 million tons, they would still remain at a record high of 188.8 million tons, held mostly by China and India.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Retail fertilizer prices continue to march higher and higher according to locations tracked by DTN for the first week of April. All fertilizers were higher once again compared to last month. Leading the way higher was urea. The nitrogen fertilizer was 14% more expensive compared to last month and had an average price of $1,031 a ton, which is an all-time high price in a DTN data set. DAP was 13% higher compared to the prior month with an average price of $1,040 a ton, an all-time high price. And MAP was 11% more expensive, looking back at a month with an average price of $1,056 a ton. Potash was also up a considerable amount. DTN designates a significant move as anything 5% or more. Potash was 6% more expensive compared to last month and had an average price of $875 a ton. Grub Market has announced it has completed the acquisition of Ontario, Canada-based Wadware, an award-winning and long-standing enterprise software as a service provider that specializes in building software solutions for businesses operating in the North American fresh produce industry. Founded more than 33 years ago by owner F. Charles Wad, Wadware delivers comprehensive software that improves productivity and performance for its extensive customer base. The company's flagship product is a web-based produce inventory control system. It's a supply chain management software that helps customers navigate the complexities of produce traceability, growing, buying, production, selling, inventory tracking, accounting, reporting, security, process control, and more. PIX is an all-in-one software solution designed to allow owners and managers to handle all business functions in one place, improving efficiencies through the reduction of manual intervention and input and eliminating the risk of errors. PIX is also known for having industry-leading traceability functionality that meets the stringent regulatory requirements of both the U.S. FDA's Food Safety Modernization Act and Canada's Safe Food for Canadians Act. Wadware maintains its position as a leading innovator in the industry by staying close to its customers and continuously improving PIX based on customer feedback and market signals. Wadware software development offerings will add to the breadth of GrubMarket's e-commerce and software product family, which already includes the innovative and proprietary WholesaleWare software suite. The company's software as a service platform that provides food industry wholesalers and distributors with seamless financial management, easy-to-use sales and online ordering features, precise inventory management, lot traceability and tracking, grower accounting, and automated routing and logistics tools.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Encouraging developments are unfolding in California's wine grape market, but growers will have to stay on top of their input costs this year to secure positive per acre returns. That outlook comes from Carl Lehman of Allied Grape Growers, a wine grape marketing association that represents about 500 independent growers. Lehman delivered his forecast at the Outlook 2022 Agribusiness Conference held March 24th in Visalia. The conference was presented by the California chapter of the American Society of Farm Managers and Rural Appraisers. Following his presentation, Lehman, who is manager of South Valley operations for Allied Grape Growers, reviewed his key points for My Ag Life.
Some of the key messages, one of them is we are headed for some opportunities in the wine grape market that are better than what we've had in the past, but we have to be cautiously optimistic because it still is going to boil down to tons in yield per acre, and with the geopolitical state of where things are at, it is hard to gauge where we're headed with farming inputs. And so we caution that there are planting opportunities, but you're going to have a very, very sharp pencil.
Lehman says California still has enough wine grape acreage in the ground to produce a 4 million ton crop. But even if growers did produce that much, and though it's more than the wine industry can typically consume on a yearly basis, there is such a shortfall of supply that the market will be able to absorb it, no problem. And that's partly because demand is increasing for certain varieties.
So in the valley, we're seeing a high demand for whites, i.e. French Columbard, Chenin Blanc, Chardonnay, some Pinot Gris. We are also seeing a little bit of interest in some Ruby Reds from another varietal side. But for the most part, it's whites. And then when you get into the North Valley is where we're seeing a demand for reds. And believe it or not, Zinfandel is one of those varieties that we're seeing interest in because a lot of Zin has come out of the ground in Lodi.
Another escalating trend in California wine grape production is the move to greater mechanization. As labor costs increase, Lehman says, mechanization is key to survival.
In order to be sustainable long term, we are doing everything we can to convert existing vineyards or any new planting we're doing. We are converting solely to mechanization. And by doing that, the main thing is trying to eliminate labor inputs, because it can be very costly, especially when it comes to pruning. Pruning is one of the biggest things that has skyrocketed in the past, I'd say even 3 years. And so we're doing a lot of mechanization, and all of our plantings that are mechanized, we're doing tighter row spacing, and we're also with the auspice of that, planning and expecting to get low to mid 20s tons per acre.
California grape growers also need to be aware of a new state regulation that phases out vineyard burning.
After 2025, you're no longer going to be allowed to burn a vineyard removal. So the NRCS, the Air Board, I should say, the Air Board has come out with some restrictions. So after 2022 until 2025, they're phasing out how many, the size of the farming operation that you have is going to limit the ability of if you're able to burn or chip. Now, there is a subsidies program that they are providing some means to help growers in that process of chipping, but after 2025, when they do mandate you chip and not burn, there's no funding beyond 2025. So that's also something that's very important to note. So if you're not familiar with it, I would go onto the Air Board's website, and they have all the restrictions and the phase out program there available for you to look at.
While higher costs for everything from fuel to fertilizers will make 2022 a tougher than normal year, Lehman sees a growing consumer trend that's likely to boost wine sales.
I think one thing to pay attention to look at long-term when we look at success and sustainability of California wine sales is that come 2023, the average age of the millennial will be 37 years old. And if you look back in history, at age 37, when the baby boomers hit that range is when wine sales started to skyrocket. And for the past couple of years, wine sales have been kind of stagnant, and, you know, trading and whether it be off by 0.5% or gaining 1%, it's just been kind of flat. And so when we look at from a demographic of people that is large, like the baby boomers were, it's the millennials. And at 37 is when a lot of people are kind of well established in their careers, and they start to have more disposable income. And so it's going to be real interesting to track and see how that trend is in wine sales.
Lehman wrapped up his comments with a prediction that 2022 is the year of long-term opportunity for California's wine grape industry. Here's what he meant.
I think 2022 is a period for long-term opportunity because we're seeing such a demand on all facets for wine grapes, whether you're North Coast, Central Coast, North Valley, Central Valley. And so there's opportunity there to work with wineries to try to work out some long-term deals that are beneficial on both sides. The one for the winery to secure supply for them, but also for the grower to look at getting pricing that allows it to be sustainable long term. And so just having a clear, transparent relationship with your winery is key. And I think that there is some opportunity to set up some long term, success.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.